I'm going to bring it down for a second. Kentucky.
That is where two students were killed and 14 injured in
18.
Are we up to 18 now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, 14 were injured by gunfire.
Yes.
Let me say that.
I wouldn't say that's the thing is that 16 of the wounded were injured by the gunfire and four others. Oh, it's actually grown since I wrote this. Four others were hurt trying to escape.
Okay. Because those numbers keep moving around.
Two were killed.
An unidentified 15-year-old who is still in the juvenile court system. Once they decide to try him as an adult, we'll find out who he is.
They actually did, just before the show began, decide to try him as an adult.
We still don't have a name or a motive,
but they have confirmed that they're going to try him as an adult, as they should.
Now, the interesting thing in this one is the kids that they've been talking to about him all say he was a pretty happy-go-lucky guy. He was a band kid. He had friends. He was joking around with everybody. And people seem genuinely shocked that this was the shooter, which means there's some other kid in that school that everyone should probably be really worried about right now.
Yeah. Yeah. God, I'm glad I'm not in high school anymore.
That will be out of the news cycle in another day, by the way.
I know.
Because we just don't care anymore.
I was going to say, that's the thing, is that I think it's very telling that the fact that there was a school shooting did not even occur to me to be the main national story today. It didn't, because it's become so commonplace.
Yeah.
It's become so, oh, another one. Like, when I was a kid, we spoke about this, the last gigantic shooting, which I don't know if it was the Vegas one or the Miami one, but when Columbine happened, I was in middle school, and I remember thinking, this is crazy, and this is such an isolated, insane incident. Like, this, there's no way this is going to happen again. And it's happened, tenfold.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you look up school shootings in America on Wikipedia, anyone listening, go do it right now. Look up school shootings in America on Wikipedia. The list will blow your mind.
Pretty common.
There are, I'd say it's in triple digits at this point. And it used to be just this insane, far-out concept. And it just makes me...
Well...
It makes me sick.
I'm wondering...
You know what? If you're that upset about life, just kill yourself.
I'm wondering, I encourage all mass shooters to take my advice, because nothing is more embarrassing than showing up for your shooting and finding out that your
gun
is
doesn't work. Yeah.
Test the gun on yourself first to make sure it works, and then go have your little shooting spree. I would like to know why a 15-year-old has a handgun.
Yeah, that's a very excellent point as well.
And enough ammunition to shoot 16 people.
Well, that's the thing, is that it's... When I found out that he was 15, I was like, 15? And then I was like, oh, it's in Kentucky.
It is illegal for him to possess that weapon in Kentucky.
Yeah, but it's not illegal for his cousin or his uncle or his father.
But somebody screwed up in letting this kid get at the gun in the first place. And we'll find out more in the coming days.
My mom has cousins in Texas. They go shooting. Her cousin has teenage sons. They go shooting once a week.
Yeah.
It's just of course, it's as simple as you can use the iPad. Oh yeah, you can use the gun.
That's fine. If you're teaching your kids to shoot, if you're teaching your kids gun safety, that's fine. The guns stay locked up when the kids aren't at the range. And you know where those guns are at all times. Mm-hmm. That is responsible gun ownership. And everybody wants to sit around and scream and cry about, we need gun laws. We have gun laws. Once again, in this case, they were not followed.
I was going to say, they were not observed.
A 15-year-old should not be walking around with a handgun, period, let alone walking into a high school with it. So, I said we were going to bring this up in the last segment.
Amazon
made a lot of news this week.
Is what people call me. Oh, I'm sorry. Was something not about me for a moment?
Yes. You'd be amazed at how many things aren't about you.
No, I just don't pay attention to them.
Yes, we've noticed.
Shut up.
Becky with the good hair.
Oh my God. I hate that phrase.
Do you know the Amazon thing or not? Stop Googling. You're not allowed to Google during this segment.
I'm Googling something about the story that I'm saying next. Shut up. The Amazon thing. Something about Amazon Go?
No.
Then no, I don't know what it is.
I mentioned in the last segment in the technology story that Amazon initially had been very opposed to giving any sort of tax information or sales information to Massachusetts officials. Then all of a sudden, out of the blue, and they came out and they said, we're not going to do it. It's wrong. No, we have to defend our data. All of a sudden, out of the blue, they hand the information over with no question, and the fight disappears. Coincidentally, about a week or so before that, Boston was named a finalist for Amazon Headquarters 2. Are these two things related? Possibly. Not only has Boston been named a finalist for Amazon Headquarters 2, but PattyPower.com, which has been running the odds on what state or city or what city is most likely to get Amazon HQ2, has Boston as the winner. 2-1 odds for Boston to get HQ2 right now. Atlanta is in second place, 5-1 odds. Austin is at 11-2. Washington, D.C. is at 8-1. Pittsburgh, 10-1. Philadelphia, 11-1. Toronto, Chicago, Newark, and Denver are all tied at 16-1.
Wait, someone wants to put anything in Newark?
Yes. They got an airport in Newark.
I think... Oh, I'm aware. That's how I flew to Europe, and that is the only time I've ever willingly gone to Newark.
Now, my own personal feeling is that this is a battle between Atlanta and Toronto. So if I was going to lay money down on this, I'd be putting money on Atlanta before I'd be putting money on Boston, because Atlanta's got the space. But Boston's got the workforce that Amazon wants.
Yeah, I was going to say, Boston's got the... Well, especially, I mean, we have so many colleges, so many people graduate and have fallen in love with Boston and want to stay here and need a reason to.
Yeah.
So there are a bunch of eager 22-year-olds that they could hire, you know? But I, personally, I mean, if it was me, I would bid on Austin or Chicago because they're both pretty central. They're both, you know, in terms of just how large an arm you have to reach. Both of those are pretty.
Yeah.
The arm doesn't have to be that long.
Plus, it makes international shipping much, much easier and international travel much easier if you're in Boston versus Atlanta. It cuts a lot of time off. Denver may see its 16-1 odds drop rather significantly, because yesterday Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper said that not getting Headquarters 2 would be a relief because they wouldn't have to do all of the work necessary to support it.
That's fair.
That's the sort of thing that will get you taken off the list very quickly.
I mean, well, it's just like a yeah, that's true. Basically being like, we don't want to try.
Yeah. Oh, if you don't want us, then we won't come here.
Yeah, guess what? Everyone else does.
Is that what you're saying, Governor Hickenlooper?
Okay. Gay couple, State Department.
Gay couple, is this a gay couple at the State Department or gay couples and the State Department?
Gay couples and a specific gay couple and the State Department.
Oh, that I can't help you with.
A gay couple is taking legal action after only one of their twin sons was recognized as a U.S. citizen. The family is suing the U.S. State Department after 16-month-old Ethan Devash Banks, whose biological father is Israeli citizen Elad Devash Banks, was refused the same rights as his brother Aiden, whose biological father is Andrew Devash Banks, an American citizen. The couple met while Andrew studied in Israel. They're both listed on the birth certificates of their children, who were born in Canada through a surrogate using donor eggs and sperm from each father. The battle comes after they moved to Canada to get married, as they were unable to do so in either Israel or the U.S. This was before, so they get married before the Supreme Court ruling passed. And they filed their case after they moved to L.A. and Ethan's tourist visa expired. And basically they're saying like you can't, their denial of his citizenship is based upon a law that was made for children who are born out of wedlock in a different country. And they're essentially not recognizing them as a married couple because they're same sex.
This is way too complicated.
I know. It's incredibly complicated. But it's also, once you actually break down, it's really unfair. Because it's basically the...
First of all, they're not twins if they have different fathers.
They're twins in that they are twins and that they were born on the same day from the same uterus. It's the same as being a fraternal twin.
But they're not genetic twins.
They're not genetic twins.
And what the... And,
but they
and
are
I
twins
get...
in that they grew in the same uterus and were born on the same day and have the same mother.
That's fine. I can throw 20 eggs in a woman from 20 different couples and they're not twins.
Really? Can you film it when you do that?
No.
Because that looks really impressive. Wait, you produce eggs? I could have sworn men couldn't do that.
But here's what I'm saying. Here's where I'm going to explain what the State Department is doing. And it hinges on the legal definition of twins. Legally, these are not twins. They have different fathers.
But I don't think it's the legal definition of twins that is at hand.
It is, because it is. What the State Department has said is that we will respect the rights of the child of the American citizen, but not the child of the Israeli citizen. That's what they're saying.
But the point being that both of their names are on both birth certificates.
Doesn't matter.
It does matter.
It doesn't matter.
Let me paint a different scenario for you. Say I was born. My father...
You were.
Shut up.
Congratulations.
My father is an Irish citizen. My mother is an American citizen.
You are an American citizen.
And they're married. Ipso facto, I am an American citizen.
Yes.
It shouldn't be any different here. Both their names are on the birth certificate.
But
it doesn't matter if biologically... It doesn't matter if biologically I am... let's put it this way. Okay.
Here's the problem. They weren't born in the United States. They were born in Canada.
But it doesn't matter because
it does.
It's sangre.
Because it does. It's because
in sangre or in what's that stupid Latin term? It's like you can be American by land or by blood. In sangre or in what's that stupid Latin word?
Legally, let me explain to you how it works. If you are an American citizen and you have a child overseas, that child is an American citizen, unless you renounce that child's citizenship and say, I want my child to be Canadian or what have you. So if both of those children had been born in the United States of America and an American citizen's name is on the birth certificate for both of them, they get equal rights. Okay? It doesn't matter that they're not genetic twins. Because they were born in Canada, only one of them is an American citizen.
No. That's not true.
It is true. That's what the law says.
Jus sanguinis. That's what it's called.
No, it's what the law says.
It's...
An Israeli who has a child in Canada has no claim to that child being an American citizen.
Jus sanguinis is a principle of nationality law by which citizenship is not determined by the place of birth, but by having one or both parents who are citizens of the state. Both names are on the birth certificate, one of them being an American citizen. It does not matter. It doesn't matter if the kid was born in Taiwan.
Genetically.
The fact that he is legally the guardian, legally the father of this child, means that he is an American.
Genetically, I can prove that that's not true, and genetics trump the name on the birth certificate in this area of law 100% of the time. Now, why the State Department is making a big deal out of one kid?
That's the thing, it's a 16-month-old.
Is another thing entirely.
And it's legitimately, I mean, they've lived, Elad has lived in America, married to Andrew for years. They were married long enough ago that it was before it was legal.
Yeah.
In America. They had to go to Canada to get married.
But legally,
that is how
I understand what the State Department is doing, and legally what the State Department is doing is correct.
Well, they're being a bunch of jerks, though.
Well, you know, that's the law is the law.
I still don't think, though, even though they're not related by blood, I still legally, I'm going to call my sister and piss and moan to her about this later, because I think legally still, because he is, it'd be the same as if you adopted a child from Korea. If your name is on their birth certificate.
Your name wouldn't be on their birth certificate because they have a Korean birth certificate.
If your name is on the thing that, if your name, if there's a legal document that says they belong to you, then they're American. They, it's just, it doesn't make any sense.
Adoption is different. Because adoption is an American citizen bringing someone who is a minor to the United States under their guardianship, and citizenship is conferred in that particular relationship.
How was that different from an American bringing a child that was born that he signed the birth certificate of in the country north of us to America?
Because it is a ceremonial signing. He is not the father of that child. He may be the recognized partner of the father of that child, but that child is not his genetically. The mother is not an American citizen. She's Canadian. The father's an Israeli. So there is no American blood anywhere near this kid.
I feel like we should talk about this over some poutine later.
Yeah. We'll get some Tim Hortons and sort it out. Twitter password.
And liters of gas, because they don't do it by the gallon there. Twitter password is, does this have to do with This Is Us?
No.
Okay, then I don't know.
Apparently Hawaii may have been told sooner that the nuclear attack a week ago was not a real nuclear attack.
I did know this.
But the governor forgot his Twitter password. Speaking to the press, Governor David Icke said, quote, "I have to confess that I don't know my Twitter account logons and the passwords," end quote. Now,
oh my God, our country is going to hell.
With all due respect to the governor, we don't elect you to be on, we don't elect our leaders to be on Twitter, despite anything our orange president
may believe. Yeah, I was going to say, despite what you may think. Based on our president.
There is something reassuring about the governor of Hawaii not knowing his Twitter password. But at the same time, when there is an emergency and people are freaking out, you ought to be able to get somebody who knows the password on the phone in less than 38 minutes.
Yeah. Like, isn't there an intern somewhere that just has a list of all that stuff?
Yeah. The intern was unavailable, apparently.
Speaking of Twitter, I'm going to say This Is Us and Crockpot.
I know they won the SAG Award for Best Ensemble the other night. I don't know anything about
this.
A
this has nothing to do with that.
I don't know anything about a Crockpot.
Well, This Is Us watchers, I don't watch this show, but I'm about to spoil something. So, spoiler alert. Turn off the radio if you don't want to know what happened.
Don't
last
turn
night.
Off the radio. Just plug your ears. Keep the radio on. Yeah, never turn off the radio.
Keep the radio on, but just like block your ears for a moment. Twitter is ablaze with users saying they're going to toss out their slow cookers after a crockpot was part of a very big plot twist on This Is Us last night. The show, so my mom watches this show, and I guess one of the characters named Jack died, but they didn't explain how he died, and it's been, annoying everyone that watches it. But last night, they showed that a faulty switch on a crock pot sparked a deadly blaze, and that's how he ended up dying.
That's not how crock pots
work. But because of that, I know, someone's a dummy. But because of that, a lot of people are coming to Twitter being like, I'm never using my crock pot again. It's over. And apparently, I did some research on it. Apparently, this is not even close to the first time this has happened. After the movie Sideways, Merlot sales nationwide went down by 2%, which you think, 2%.
That's a good
nothing.
Thing.
2% is nothing. When you think of how much wine people drink, 2% is a lot.
I'm not going to argue with Merlot going away. I'm not a fan.
I was going to say, you'll like this one too. When Patton Oswalt, in 2007, he went on The Late Show and talked about those Kentucky Fried Chicken, the bowls they came out with.
I think the famous bowls?
Them.
Yes.
But he just made a joke about how disgusting they are.
I think he called them Bowl of Fail.
Bowl of Fail! That's exactly what he did. But at KFC, over the next several months, KFC's sales dropped off by 12%.
They are a bowl. That is the most accurate description I can think of.
Oh, yeah. Patton Oswalt's a genius.
It is a bowl of fail.
He absolutely hit the nail on the head with that one. But it's interesting, though, just how pop culture can can affect things like that. But so crockpots, apparently a lot of people are like talking a lot of smack just because it happened to kill Jack, even though, like you said, that's not how slow cookers work.
We'll have to keep an eye on the crockpot social media.
Molly, if you're listening, don't throw out your crockpot.
Yeah.
Derek likes slow cooked meals.
We'll have to keep an eye on the crockpot Twitter and see where that goes.
Oh yeah, I even looked at some of them. I was like, really, guys? Like, it's like watching Family Guy and not doing something because Peter.
Yeah, I'm sure it won't be as
doing it.
I'm sure it won't be as entertaining as the Tide Twitter feed was last week.
Oh yes, that was.
We'll see. Toys R Us.
Let me look through my notes. Nope.
The list of closures came out today.
Yes.
182 stores may close. Some of these may stay if they can renegotiate their leases, and court approval is necessary for this. Here around New England, they are leaving Maine entirely. They've got two stores up there right now, Bangor and Portland. Those are both shutting down. They're also shutting down their only store in Warwick, Rhode Island. They'll still have one in South Attleboro, so you can get there if you're in Providence. But Maine, Rhode Island, no more Toys R Us at all. New Hampshire is shutting down everything except for Nashua, Salem, and Manchester. So they'll have three stores there, pretty good locations. Here in Massachusetts, Dedham, Millbury, Holyoke, Bellingham, Northborough, and Framingham.
No way.
Are all shutting down.
The Framingham one is huge,
and
too.
Out of those stores, Dedham and Framingham are the ones that really surprised me. Dedham is one of the oldest Toys R Us in the state.
Yeah.
And Framingham is in the middle of a massive shopping district.
I would say in the middle of a shopping center.
Yeah.
That's, oh my God, I thought it was just going to be KB Toys. Because Toys R Us is, I mean, KB Toys, when they went bankrupt, I was like, yeah, they're like, it's always a small store with kind of a limited selection. Toys R Us was like Walmart of toys.
Yeah.
Like, they just had everything. Like, anything you could possibly want toy-wise.
But the thing about Toys R Us is, I don't know if you've been in one lately.
I mean, why would I? I like Michaels now.
I like my
grown-up dorky toys.
I have child
dorky toys.
I have small people in my life who I need to get gifts for occasionally. And Toys R Us, it's this bland warehouse to begin with.
It's
giant.
It's definitely, it's like you feel like you go, hello.
Yeah, they're one of the original like big box retailers.
Yeah.
And they have the least helpful employees of any store that you could ever hope to walk into.
I believe it.
People who shop at Toys R Us on a regular basis understand this one truth. Never ask anyone a question because they can't answer it. And you will confuse them, and it will take them 20 minutes to get their brain cells reorganized well enough to be able to complete a transaction. It's amazing how uninformed and unhelpful. Like, Walmart staffers are better trained and more helpful than the people at Toys R Us.
They at least give you a smiley face sticker.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, Toys R Us has done this to themselves to a very large extent. And I got to believe on some level, the over-merchandising of Disney and Star Wars and Marvel, because you walk into a Toys R Us and you see all this Disney stuff all over the place and Star Wars stuff all over the place. Deep clearance, none of it's selling. Disney's pumping out way too much product, and I think it's sinking them.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't dug deep into that yet, but I have a feeling there may be some truth to that. 855-915-9636. That's the telephone number. WMFO is the station. Run outside. Tell your neighbors it's WMFO. On the tell, Mikey D, coming up at 9 o'clock tonight. But before we get to that, the Oscar nominations are out.
They are indeed.
And they're interesting. And we're going to take a look at who was nominated, why they were nominated, and who might win right after this.
Sometimes in winter, I gaze into the streets and walk through snow and city sleep behind your room. remember you behind the trees with leaves that cry. By the window once I waited for you, laughing slightly you would run. Trees alone would shield us in the meadow, making love in the evening sun. Now you're gone, girl, and the lampposts call your name. I can hear them in a spring of frozen rain. Now you're gone, girl, and the time slow down till dawn. It's a cold room, and the walls ask where you've gone.
For the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, I'm Dr. Tom Shives. People who enjoy winter sports can't wait for the first snowfall. But winter sports can also mean broken bones and other injuries. For instance, every year, skiing causes tens of thousands of injuries and about 30 deaths in the U.S. A lot of those are from head injuries, so skiers of all ages should wear helmets. Head injuries tend to occur late in the day when skiers may be tired, so watch out for fatigue. Using a helmet is also a great idea for children who go ice skating or sledding. Other sledding safety tips: only go sledding in designated areas that are free of trees, posts, and fences. Adults should supervise children, and all sledders should sit facing forward, but never head first. Use a sled with runners and a steering mechanism, which is safer than toboggans or snow discs. Prevent winter sports injuries so you can focus on the fun. For more information, visit the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons online at aaos.org.
Hi, this is James Brown, Soul Brother number one, always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad.
Thank you.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Blame. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you until 9 o'clock. If you want to give us a call at 855-915-WMFO. And now, because this is the slowest news week in the history of mankind, we are going to talk to you about the wonderful Oscar nominations. Who was nominated? Who deserved to be nominated? Who did not deserve to be nominated?
I think the people who deserve to be nominated were nominated.
I think so too, actually. I was going to say, like, this is pretty on the nose.
I hear people grousing about, oh, Wonder Woman wasn't nominated. Folks, Wonder Woman was an average movie.
Yeah.
It was an average superhero movie.
Just because it's your favorite female superhero doesn't mean that it's Sophie's Choice or Schindler's List,
yeah,
okay?
It's like, look, Gal Gadot was good. Patty Jenkins did a great job. It made a lot of money, but it wasn't that great of a movie. You know, it was a well-executed, entertaining superhero movie and not anything that needs a Best Picture or Best Director nomination. So, so we got the thing now where they got to nominate, like, everything. And they only had 9 Best Picture nominees this year.
Yeah, which is interesting.
There's a maximum of 10, and there's one that
literally means we just couldn't find enough good movies.
You know, I look at the list and I ask myself, what else could you put here? Mm. And the one film that I think might have made it into contention
that did not
was Blade Runner 2049, which was a disaster at the box office, and they hate science fiction, so it's not going to get in there anyway. But because it got so many technical awards, usually if you get a bunch of nominations, they're going to throw you in for Best Picture.
Yeah.
That did not happen.
I would say that's what I found interesting is that Margot Robbie is nominated for I, Tonya, which, by the way, my personal opinion, I think she should win.
Saw I, Tonya over the weekend. Loved it.
And that's what I found so shocking is that everyone, I haven't seen it yet because all of my friends, hey, Krista, Phoebe, Arlen, Janet, thanks so much for going without me. But all my friends have already seen it and everyone I would ask to go with me. But I was shocked to not see that on the Best Picture list because everyone that's seen it has been like, this is going to be Best Picture this year. And it's not even nominated.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that obviously, you know, we have the actress in a leading role and actress in a supporting role on the docket with I, Tonya. And honestly, I do. It's not just because I love Allison Janney, but just from the clips that I've watched, I feel like she really needs that. Like, she deserves that actress in a supporting role Oscar. Mm. And I love Octavia Spencer, who's also in the running. But just from the... And knowing... Because before even I, Tonya was a thing, before we suddenly cared about it again, I was really into the whole Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan controversy.
I'm Team Tonya, so... And that'll get you in a lot of trouble around here if you're Team Tonya.
And that's... Well, and she was really kind of a patsy in the whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was like... That happening had nothing really to do with her aside from the fact that it was a lot of other people trying to live off of her awesomeness. You know what I mean? Like trying to make the most out of what she had. And but because of that, I have watched a lot of things and read a lot of things about her. And based on the footage that I've seen, Allison Janney just like nailed her mother, like nailed it.
Allison Janney is amazing in the movie.
I mean, she's just amazing in general,
and in particular because there is the movie. I'm not giving anything away by saying this. The movie alternates between what are meant to be staged interviews with the characters in the present day and full filmed versions of things that happened in the past. Mm. And it occasionally breaks the wall between those two things. But in Allison Janney's present day interview, there is a parakeet on her shoulder throughout the whole thing. And it is
so cool.
And it is a live parakeet because Tonya Harding's mother was known and still does own parakeets, I think. So she's got this bird on her shoulder through the whole thing. And the bird is nibbling on her ear through the whole thing.
And she is making nothing of it.
And she is occasionally reacting to the bird, and she's occasionally not reacting to the bird. It's brilliant. It's perfect.
Do you know,
and it's something that most actors wouldn't go near in a million years. Worth seeing just for
that. I would say that's the thing is she's awesome. I will say to this day, my favorite, and she's been in so much stuff, my favorite role of hers was in the movie 10 Things I Hate About You. She's the guidance counselor that is writing a smut novel on the side. And is and even when she's meeting Julia Stiles, as you know, 10 Things I Hate About You is an updated version of Taming of the Shrew, and Julia Stiles is the Shrew, and she meets with Alice Janney and talks to her about whatever thing that got her called to the guidance counselor. And as Julia Stiles is leaving, she goes, "I'll let you get back to Reginald's quivering member."
Yeah.
And Alice Janney goes, quivering member. Oh, that's good. I should use that." Like, she's just so perfect. I love her so much.
Nice.
But yeah, like, in terms of...
So here's the movies you got to go see. Here's your Best Picture nominees. Call Me By Your Name. This is a coming-of-age gay love story. And a film that Bret Easton Ellis called the first legitimate gay love story that has ever been put on film.
And that is... And first of all, that's saying something. Second of all, praise. If Bret Easton Ellis is saying it, you believe it.
That's very, very high praise. And people who've seen it are just blown away by it. It's still out in theaters right now. Darkest Hour, still out in theaters right now. Gary Oldman is Winston Churchill during World War II. Supposed to be amazing. I will get around to seeing that at some point. Dunkirk, you can go and you can rent that from Redbox. You can go buy that on Blu-ray. It came out last summer. That was the Christopher Nolan film about the evacuation from Dunkirk, told in three timelines that sort of intersect as the movie goes on. Really, really good war movie. Get Out, you can also get on Blu-ray. It may be streaming somewhere. I think HBO's got it, so unless you got HBO, you're not streaming it. But that is Jordan Peele's horror movie / social satire comedy.
I was going to say that it might be the first horror movie that is also something else.
Yeah. Like, it's even Jordan Peele.
And that's what I was going to say in terms of best actor. I think that it should go to him.
Even Jordan Peele himself is reluctant to say the film is a straight up horror movie.
Because it's not.
It's not. It's biting hilarious social satire that uses all of the gimmicks and cliches of a horror movie to tell its story.
Well, I was going to say, that's not best actor. What is he up for in it?
Best director
best
original screenplay.
I would say best original screenplay. I think he should absolutely get the Oscar because it's so rare that you find a film that... Sorry, guys. I was a film major. I'm going to geek out for a while we talk about this. But it's so rare that you find a film that accomplishes multiple things. It's usually a horror movie. It's a love story. It's pervasive. It's da 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 da. It's very rare that you can be like, it's a horror movie. It's also kind of funny. And it's also huge social commentary.
Yeah.
It's just a really brilliantly written film. And brilliantly executed. And the sheer fact, you know, I'm a horror movie nerd. So, like, the sheer fact that there is something that can be slated as a horror movie is even on the list is bonkers. Like, the fact that a horror movie was good enough to be in Oscar consideration says that it should just get the Oscar, you know?
Yeah, but like the only time they ever gave it to something that was even remotely like a horror movie was Silence of the Lambs.
Well,
and Silence of the Lambs is arguably more of a thriller, than a horror movie. Yeah.
But I mean, there's a first time for everything. Think about when Best Original Song was the first rap song was Hustle and Flow.
It's not going to get it.
It's
not
going to
get it.
I'm not saying it's going to get it. I'm saying that it should.
It's amazing that it was nominated.
That's by itself. But you never know.
This is a black film by a black writer, black director, and it was a surprise hit.
It was definitely it blew people out of the water. Everyone looked at it like it was going to be like another Napoleon Dynamite or something, where it was like, oh, like kind of indie, like, yeah, it's funny for what it is, or it is what it is, blah, blah, blah. But it's like I said, it's just like when Hustle and Flow won best score. It's Shut Up. That movie is amazing.
Oh my God, don't even get me movie started.
Oh my God, Hustle and Flow is so good. But it's the same thing where it's like, as much as it's definitely unprecedented and it definitely makes no sense for it to win anything, I don't think it will win Best Picture, but I do think that it could and should win either Best Director or Best Original Screenplay.
It's going to get screenplay.
I was going to say, it's going to get at least one of those because it just should. It's too good to not win anything. It's too good to not win something reputable. Because we're not talking like Best Costumes or whatever.
The they will not give that award to a first-time director. They will not give that award to a film made by a first-time director, usually.
Yeah.
There have been exceptions to that, but generally speaking, I mean, considering what you're going up against here, it's pretty unlikely.
He's against Christopher Nolan, Greta Gerwig, Thomas Anderson, Guillermo del Toro.
They love giving Best Original Screenplay to a first-time screenwriter.
I mean, look at that chick that wrote Juno.
Yeah. Also, Best Picture nominees, Lady Bird. That's got Saoirse Ronan and Laurie Metcalf in a coming-of-age tale of a teenage girl in the 1990s. That is out in theaters right now. Phantom Thread is still rolling out into theaters as we speak. That is the last Daniel Day-Lewis movie. And Daniel Day-Lewis is playing a fashion designer and actually trained himself to be a haute couture fashion designer to make this movie.
And he's also up for Best Actor in Leading Role.
When you see Phantom Thread, don't worry. There is no Jar Jar anywhere near this movie. The Post has opened wide. That is the Steven Spielberg film about the Pentagon Papers with Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep. As the managing editor and the publisher of the Washington Post, deciding whether or not they were going to risk the ire of Richard Nixon. The Shape of Water, which led all films 13 nominations for The Shape of Water, Guillermo del Toro's film about a mute woman who falls in love with a river god, sea creature, river creature, and helps it escape from a laboratory.
People love this movie. This is up for an Oscar?
Yes, people love it. It's not going to win anything.
I've always thought that Guillermo del Toro was just famous because his name is so fun to say.
Not going
to
win anything. and then Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which is a slice of life story about a mother trying to get justice for her murdered daughter.
I will say I have not seen this, but I've heard unbelievable things about it.
Now, this is the interesting thing. The Shape of Water you can see in theaters. Get Out and Dunkirk you can rent or buy and watch at home. Three Billboards is the one film that you can't see anywhere right now. Mm-hmm. It's not in theaters. It hasn't been released on home video. It's not on digital. It is very likely that that film will get a re-release now that it has all the Oscar nominations. So if you wait a week and you check the Arlington, the Somerville Theater, the Salem...
Kendall Square is showing it tonight at 9:45.
Yeah, Kendall Square.
For that reason.
The smaller theaters around town will have this. You'll be able to see it.
But I would say it's all the little, we like artsy stuff theaters that are going to show it.
I have a feeling that this is a movie that you really, really, really want to go see.
Me?
Well,
in general?
Everybody.
I would say it's the amount of buzz that it's gotten, despite how not publicized and not thrown out there it says that you really need to see this movie. Like it just
based on the Golden Globes and the SAG Awards.
Yeah.
Like Frances McDormand is going to win Best Actress and Sam Rockwell is going to win Best Supporting Actor. For this movie.
Can Frances McDormand do anything wrong?
Because no.
I don't believe she can. One of my favorite lines of any movie ever is, you might want to check your police work there, Bob.
Yep. We'll pull out a couple
That's Fargo, if none of you recognize.
Pull out a couple of other interesting things here. Blade Runner 2049 has an award for Best Cinematography for Roger Deakins. And that's going to be very, very interesting. You can buy or rent Blade Runner 2049 right now to see how gorgeous it is, and it is. Dunkirk is also nominated. And my early pick is that Dunkirk is going to take the award because of the IMAX dogfight scenes, which have never been done before. And this is really sort of pushing the medium forward. The question is whether or not that resonates with enough of the voters for them to say, yeah, you've really done something here. But Christopher Nolan films have been a force in that category in the past.
I mean, it's difficult to not nominate a Christopher Nolan film for something. Everything he does just is, especially cinematography-wise, everything he does is just really pristine. The word that comes to mind is pristine. And especially as, like I said, I majored in film in college, so movies are kind of ruined for me because I can't just watch and enjoy a movie now. I pick apart every single little detail of it. But that's a pleasure when you're watching a Christopher Nolan film. Same with Scorsese. Martin, I love you.
Beauty and the Beast picked up a couple of nominations for production design and costume design and may be a strong contender in those categories. If you have Netflix, go ahead and queue up Mudbound because that film actually came away with a few different nominations. Best Supporting Actress for Mary J. Blige.
Which is dope.
Best Original Song, although that's going to be a tough category this year, but Mighty River is in there. And also Best Cinematography. So three noms for a Netflix movie that you can go home and watch right now.
Yeah.
Or turn off the radio. Turn off the radio after the show.
I was going to say, or in 14 minutes, you can turn off the radio and and watch that.
So so pretty much everything you want to see is going to be in theaters. The two that you can go and get and watch in the comfort of your own home right now are Dunkirk and Get Out, and both highly, highly recommended.
Mm.
Awesome films, both of them. If you don't like war movies, you're probably not going to like Dunkirk, but it is a very, very good war movie, and it'll be interesting to see how that one does. Because as I look across this year and the Oscar nominations, we will be doing our Oscar preview show and helping you win your poll yet again this year. This is one of those years when the above-the-line awards, all of the majors, look pretty well locked down. So the key is going to be getting the below-the-line technicals.
Yeah, I was going to say, all about the cinematography, the original score, original song.
That's usually where I shine. And looking at the competition this year, yeah, it's going to be a tough one. 855-915-9636 is the phone number. It is The Big Picture on the Tell Mikey D, less than 15 minutes away with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. When we come back, our favorite things from the past week and the strangest things from the past week here on WMFO Medford.
Starlit night, and then you're You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it. You hear it every time you finish a meal and never feel anything. But if we were able to associate this sound with a new stimulus, save the food, we've achieved pulling a natural response from you. Save the food. Why are we doing this, you may ask? Save the food. Because this ad is trying to change your after-meal behavior through brainwashing. Because food waste costs the average family $1,500 a year. Save the food. Cha-ching. And $1,500 extra is like getting a pay raise. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Which could pay for your child's braces. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Check out my braces.
So when you hear this sound, rethink your behavior. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. For tips and recipes, visit savethefood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we live in our dream.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Blaine. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. To wrap up the show this evening, we are going to tell you what's hot, which is our favorite thing from last week. For me, it's amid the rise in the political activism across the country, young American women have apparently been drawn to witchcraft as a sign of feminism and community building. Salem, Massachusetts, as it has always been, is ingrained in the mythos of witches and has accordingly drawn many women who are curious about the movement. Some of these witches come from families that actually practice witchcraft, while others are new to the world of spells and mysticism. One thing they have in common is that they see it as a feminist practice and encourage those of you who are interested to join to just come to Salem.
Yeah, don't go to Salem now because they got Essex Street shut down for some kind of pipe work. I was in Salem today, and it's like there's road work all over downtown, and you can't get anywhere.
So what you're saying is the witchcraft works.
No, I'm saying the public works don't, is what I'm saying.
But how do you know that it's not a result of witchcraft, Derek?
You never know. If you find yourself in Brooklyn, thank God that you're not in New Jersey. That's the first thing that you do. Then head by Vinny's Pizzeria for a safe alternative to the Tide Pod Challenge. Motivated by all of the social media around Tide Pods. Vinny's now offers something that they call Pied Pods. These are small pizzas with pepperoni and cheese dyed in the blue and orange colors that make Tide Pods so attractive. So this is a completely safe way for you to eat something that looks like a Tide Pod, but in fact tastes like delicious pizza.
I still don't understand the appeal of the Tide Pod. I use Tide Pods, and I, like, when that story broke and we were talking about it, I went home that night, looked at a Tide Pod, and was like, but I don't get it.
You weren't motivated to eat
this
any of them?
This does not look delicious to me in any way.
Yeah.
Aye.
They announced this with a tweet that's got pictures of the Pied Pods on it. And says, quote, listen, we're concerned about the youths. They're eating laundry detergent pods. Our Pied Pods, filled with roni and cheese. Wait, I just lost it. Come back here. Stupid advertising. Our Pied Pods, filled with cheese and roni. Have that bright, alluring colors that youths crave, but are 100% edible and 100% not soap.
That is a very appealing quality in a food, to have it not be soap.
Pied Pods, kids, 100% not soap.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. To wrap up tonight's big picture, we're going to say that's a thing that happened, which is the craziest story from the previous week. For me, there will be a showdown. I'm very excited about it. It's a showdown with Satan next Tuesday in the Missouri Supreme Court. Not with Lucifer himself, but with a group called the Satanic Temple that is going to bat for a woman identified as Mary Doe. She contends the state's informed consent law, which requires her to wait 72 hours before having an abortion in May 2015, violated her religious beliefs. Specifically, the woman, who is identified in the case summary as a Greene County resident, says she was forced to view an ultrasound of her fetus and pledged that she read a booklet stating that the life of every human being begins at conception. This despite the fact that Doe advised doctors at the St. Louis Clinic that she adheres to the principles of the Satanic Temple and has sincerely held religious beliefs different from the information in the informed consent booklet. Specifically, her letter advised that she has deeply held religious beliefs that a non-viable fetus is not a separate human being, but is part of her body, and that abortion of a non-viable fetus does not terminate the life of a separate, unique, living human being. Jex Blackmore, who is a spokeswoman for the Satanic Temple, said the woman's religious rights were ignored. Satan really gets upset when people don't let people have abortions.
That's interesting.
I'm on this woman's side.
Yeah.
Like, get it, Mary Doe.
Because the thing about it is, I don't think anybody thought to challenge these abortion laws on religious grounds.
And the first one to do is someone who's a Satanist.
Because
I love it.
Lord knows, no pun intended, the Supreme Court and Congress run screaming whenever religious freedom is brought into any debate.
Yes.
They just run for their... They're like, no, we have to preserve it at all costs. That could be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's a case to follow.
I'm going to say, guys, keep your... I really hope her real name comes out so it's easier to follow. But keep your eyes on this one because it's going to be cool.
Montreal. Simon Laprise found a new way to have fun with the city's endless winter snow. Laprise built a full-size snow replica of a DeLorean in a snow emergency zone where parking was prohibited. The fake fooled a real police officer who called for backup. Once the officers realized the DeLorean was a snow job, they responded with a fake parking ticket reading, quote, "You made our night," end quote. Montreal's public works team was not as kind, plowing the snow car away the next morning. There are pictures of this online. I encourage you to go and find them. Because
what do you think I'm doing the minute we get off the air?
It is an actual size replica of the DeLorean. And it looks like... At first glance, it looks like someone left a DeLorean there, and there's a little bit of snow on. And I imagine they poked at it.
Oh my god, that's so cool! I can't wait to look at it.
And they were like, "Oh yeah, that's not an actual DeLorean." But good enough to fool the cops. So congratulations to Simon Laprise. Whatever happened to that Yeti that was running around Boston? Did we ever? We haven't seen the Yeti in a while. I miss the Yeti.
Oh, I shot him and killed him, and then taxidermied him.
No,
and
you
he's
didn't.
In my bedroom.
We used to have a Yeti. I miss the Yeti. I hope the Yeti comes back.
No, it's because I shot him and killed him and taxidermied him.
No,
and
you
now
did,
he's
no,
in my
you
bedroom.
Did not. No, you did not. That's not how that works. That is just about all the time that we've got on the Tell Mikey D is coming up next. Next week, we will talk about football a little bit. I know Shay gets all upset when I mention football.
No, I actually like football right now.
But, you know, the Patriots are in their 50...
I like it when Gronk doesn't have a concussion, much like his future wife, Chase Spillane.
The Patriots are in their 50 bajillionth Super Bowl, and...
Is it the 50 bajillionth?
It's the 50 bajillionth.
I thought bajillionth. It was the 50 trillionth.
It's the 50 bajillionth. Okay. This is Super Bowl L2 that they're in this year. They were also in Super Bowl L1 and, I believe, Super Bowl L. So they've been in...
I would say L1 was my favorite because I went to watch it with my cousin up in Portland, Oregon, and his wife, who's from Chicago and hates the Patriots. The first half of the game was like, "You're going to be so sad at the end of the night." And then at the end of the night, he and I just ran screaming around their house to make her mad.
So it's Super Bowl L2, and as spoiled New England fans, we have to figure out ways to get excited about these games.
Yes, true.
Because we're just kind of used to winning them all the time. So we'll have reasons. We'll come up with some manufactured drama to get you excited about the Super Bowl. Gronk will be there. Tom Brady's thumb will be healed. We'll come up with something. There's always something.
Is Giselle pregnant again?
Yes. And I was very encouraged, by the way, on Inside the NFL last night. They asked Phil Simms and Boomer Esiason and Ray Lewis, which fan